And welcome back, baseball fans, to, well, I believe it's episode 11 of the Joshua Kuznick Experience. It's been a little while since we've recorded, so anywho, I believe it's episode 11. I am Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com and the Baron of All Baseball Podcasts. And of course, I have on the line with me the man the show is named after and MLB certified agent Joshua Kuznick. Josh, how are you, man? It's been a long time.
Good. Busy. Just working a lot. Spring training took a lot out of me because I went to Arizona this year for 10 days and had to finish up Florida, and now I'm stumbling into the season.
Well, first and foremost, I haven't talked to you since, but I want to wish you my condolences on the passing of your grandmother, who has passed since the last time we did a show, and want to dedicate the show first and foremost to her, as she was a very funny subject of a previous episode that we did.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was a tough time. I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, so, well, like I said, let's, I don't want to make this show another, too much of a downer.
No, let's not do that.
But, so I think I will, not mention, or maybe we should just mention also, your good friend JC Rodriguez. We lost him as well since the last time we recorded as well.
Oh, Jesus, it's been that long? Yeah, that was horrible. I went to Juan's, funeral. At Blake Tiffany, and the kids were there. Mike Hill was there. Freddie Gonzalez flew in. It was very emotional. Mike Berardino gave a really good speech, and there were a lot of people there. And it's awful. Nothing good can be gleaned from this. It's just really terrible.
No, you. The only good thing is you wrote a beautiful column on BP about it. But other than that...
Yeah, Juan was my buddy. I knew Juan a long time, and I lived by him for a lot of years when I lived in my 20s playing baseball. Juan lived about 5 miles from me. He was always really good to me and all my players, but we were friends outside of that, so it was... It was weird. It was a different experience than my grandmother. Like, my grandmother, you knew it was coming, because she had cancer for 3 years, and with Juan, I know he was sick, but he was, you know, probably 7, 8 years older than me, and it just really seemed someone that young shouldn't die. So it's I know everyone does stuff like this, but he was the best. Like, guys like that are just a tragedy in every sense of the word. It's just, you don't expect guys like that to be gone that quickly.
Yeah, I mean, a fantastic guy. I knew his work just from reading it, you know, when he was covering the Marlins all those many years, particularly at the beginning. And just like you say, I mean, we're losing too many people way too young, and I don't really have anything else to add to that. Just condolences and RIP, and maybe let's try to make this more of an uplifting. Yeah, let's make this. Let's turn some things a little more uplifting.
Yeah.
All right.
Sure.
On my list of things that I got to ask you about, first thing I got to ask you about is, apparently you had the antique store find of all time a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, that was last month. Yeah, it was in spring. I went to an antique store by my hotel with my wife in Peoria, Arizona. And there was a New York Daily News admin book that literally had every edition of the newspaper for the week of July 24th to July 30th, or July 31st, 1927. And I thought it was a whole year's worth of newspapers, but it turns out it was just every edition. And it was, there were 6 or 7 editions for each paper. And it had just tons of stuff, you know, with Ruth, Gehrig, Melott, Roger Hornsby, Miller Huggins, Tony Rivera. A lot of, there's stuff about Babe Ruth's first vocal film reviews, and stuff with Jack Dempsey. It just had tons of stuff, and incidentally for pop culture, it had the first New York subway system. That was interesting.
What year was this again?
1927 Yankees.
Oh my gosh! I mean, that's Murderers Row, and like you say, wow. So if you just spent the whole, did you buy it? You had to have bought it.
Yeah, of course. It was $50, and it was open to the page that Babe Ruth was on, so they had some semblance of what it was. But I talked to the Hall of Fame about loaning it. They don't do too many loans, but I talked to their paper people, and I'm trying to work on getting it to Cooperstown because all the admin books have been destroyed, and the only reason it survived is because it was in Arizona in the dry climate. But all those papers are saved on microfilm, but nobody has the hard copy admin books because that was literally the book that was in the New York Daily News offices.
That's unbelievable.
I was shocked. I knew I had to get it, and I didn't post pictures of it yet, but I actually also got a 1924 Washington Senators game day program versus like the Tigers, and it had a litany of Hall of Famers in it.
Oh my gosh.
That place was ridiculous.
I was going to say, what was this, the baseball treasure trove of all time?
I mean, it was like an antique mall, and it had just about 150, 200 different vendors, and just there was a lot of sports stuff there, and a lot of pop culture stuff I love, and I saw Ruth and Jerry, and I'm like, well, I'm buying that, and it was just cool to take pictures and live tweet it when I got it.
Did you find any Nirvana stuff?
I found a assembly signed photo there that I had no interest in buying. I have his autograph, so I didn't need it.
Oh, man. Next thing I want to ask you about, goodness, and this happened a few weeks ago, but now I got to ask you about this. I guess high school kids can now have agents for the MLB draft.
Yeah, an advisor, yes, or an agent. Yeah, as long as they don't sign anything, I guess, and they pay what the normal fees are, they can have an agent speak on their behalf now, which is probably helpful for guys that do that.
And I know you avoid the draft, which you know, go back and listen to the previous podcast if you want to understand why. But I guess part of my question is, why did this come about? Because I know the NCAA has taken such a hard line on being, I'll just use the term hard ass, about the whole situation. Did they finally wise up, or what happened?
Well, it's because the NCAA is terrible, and they finally relented. They finally relented on the inevitable.
Did you see?
I mean, that's what it came down to.
I mean, side note, but did you see the tweet that Cardale Jones from Ohio State tweeted out the other day about the NCAA?
I did, and I agree with him.
I agree with him 1,000%.
I mean, and I do not agree with anything that. What's that guy's name who does all the financial stuff for ESPN? Darren Revell. I don't agree with anything he says.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that as well.
I mean, Revell was talking about how if we paid them and made them employees instead of students, it would take away all their like cost of living benefits and stuff like that. But he also left out all the employee benefits like health insurance and getting paid.
Yeah, those are kind of important things.
Yeah, he's a hack. I'm not a big fan of his work.
Well, my biggest critique is something actually Barkley was talking about a fair amount during the NCAA tournament is just, you know, we're not actually educating these kids as well.
No, they're not educating. I can speak first person. When I was at Florida State, I was a sport management major, and it was worthless. I had two good professors the entire time I was in college for sport management, and it was a waste of time. If I didn't go out and do stuff on my own, I don't think I would have made it because they underprepared me for what, if I was wholly dependent on my degree, like most people, it was just an awful program at the time. I don't know if it's changed because I don't go back there to speak anymore, even though I think I'm the only alumni who's an agent. I spoke there once after I graduated, and I begged everyone to change their major to business. And there were classes that I took in college where I'll never forget this, like there was one class, I don't even remember the name of the class, but we literally had to watch episodes of the ESPN show Ballers and then write reviews of it.
Wow. Really stimulating class there.
Yeah, and there was one class. It was facility and event management. I will never forget this. It was facility and event management. Our teacher was a Hall of Fame member for volleyball, women's volleyball. And our last question on our exam, which was 25 points, was list. It was that list your five favorite stadiums. List your five favorite stadiums, and it literally. And one of the people in the class who played football asked if it had to be professional, and she said no.
That's great.
I was like, wow, I'm impressed somebody asked that question.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah.
I had a financial teacher who did really cutting-edge analytics stuff in college, and he failed everybody. I think only six kids passed that class, and I was one of them, and I got a C-. And it was the hardest, one of the hardest classes I ever took in college, which was terrific. And then we had another professor who actually had three that were good. One who did more social issues, and then another one who handled a lot more financial stuff also. So guys who did the number stuff at the program were real good. But as a whole, I was a certified agent while I was in college, and they thought I was a joke, and I got really pissed off at them. And, you know, at that time, I just discovered Darren Ford, Steve Clevenger, Jay Sapman, Tyler Flowers, Lorenzo Cain, Michael Saunders. So that's like their first years in college. That was like the first group of players I scouted. And I think I scouted like 11 big leaguers, and to varying degrees of success or getting hired. And people in the program just ignored me. And I was like, all right, well, I'll do my thing. You guys do yours, and we'll see what happens.
Nice. And on top, you know, even back to the point, I think it's a shame that the way they, I mean, these NCAA, you know, particularly the basketball players, they're never in class. You know, what are they actually getting of an education? I mean, it's such a sham. And you know, I think the NCAA is a complete joke and it should be eliminated, but that's,
bro, I mean, it's a free minor league system for a lot of sports. It's ridiculous.
But then they should just own it and say that this is a minor league system. And I think that, like you say, then things get a lot cleaner and the murkiness changes.
I agree. I think it's ridiculous. I hate the NCAA, and I remember they called me years ago about a high school kid. They're like, hey, did you call any teams, you know, regarding this kid? And I was like, who are you? And they're like, oh, so-and-so is NCAA. And I'm like, do you guys govern anything that I do? And he goes, no, we govern the player. That's like, all right, well, you know, goes, you know, go fuck yourself. I don't even fuck you guys.
Yeah, why exactly would I give you any info? Thanks.
Yeah, if the NCAA ever calls me, I just hang up on them. I don't ever speak to them, ever. I have nothing. Even if I, well, not even if, like, even though I don't do anything wrong, I won't speak to them because I don't want to help them in any way, shape, or form.
So let me circle back to the original question that I asked was, so how does, will the changes affect anything, or basically the players still going to be treated the same way?
No, it just allows players to do what they've been doing anyway.
Gotcha. So
yeah, it's not going to change it. It shouldn't change anything.
Mm. Yeah, and that's kind of it. Maybe it makes it a little better because it's above board, but like you say, it doesn't change anything.
No, it won't. It won't change any of the mechanics of anything.
All right,
that's for Major League Baseball to negotiate with the union. You know, they can negotiate away all the draft rules.
Yeah, that's a good point. I need to ask you, we're going to have to talk CBA at some point going forward as well. I don't know if and what you can talk about, but
I don't know anything. I don't know anything. The union's not going over that stuff with agents this time. I know as much as you do.
That's scary in and of itself, and that's a statement in and of itself.
Yep. I don't know anything. I honest to God don't know any. I don't know the issues we're tackling. I don't know what the progress is. The union met with the players this spring. Players know what's going on, but unless a player tells me what's going on, I have no idea.
Why, and from the way you said that, it sounded a little odd that they aren't asked talking to you this time. Why aren't they talking to you guys?
Somebody's a leak in the room. Somebody's talking to the media, or multiple people are talking to the media, and they don't want any leaks. So it's kind of ruined it for guys that have done it for years because there's an influx of newer agents that haven't had the experience level of some of us. And it makes it difficult. So the reporters are very smart. They're preying on the inexperienced people, and you know it just makes it difficult on people like me that you know, don't do stupid stuff like that.
Yeah, very true.
That's what the reasoning is. Is I mean they can't afford to have any leaks, which I completely understand and agree with. But hopefully there's a happy medium where one day I have a clue what's going on. I mean, I have a general idea, but, you know, I don't have any insight beyond what you guys know.
You think we're looking at a work stoppage, or you think these two sides are smart enough? Yeah.
I hope not. I have no idea. It's Tony Clark's first negotiation, and it's Rob Manfred's first negotiation as commissioner, so that's scary. But hopefully it gets done. You know, that's the goal. It expires in December, and we'll see what happens.
Like you say, I think that's the biggest thing maybe that isn't getting talked about enough. Is this the first negotiation for both of these guys? And you don't want to come out looking weak or looking, you know, not good enough for both either your union or for the ownership. And that might drive things in a way that it shouldn't or wouldn't be best for both sides.
No, I agree. That's a concern just on the surface. But, you know, Tony's great and smart and knows what he's doing. And, you know, Rich Spiro and everybody at the union is the same team that Michael Wiener put in place before he passed away. And it's the same team pretty much without Michael, which is a huge loss. But, you know, hopefully Manfred just keeps the tradition going of no work stoppages.
And I hope he doesn't tamper with the draft too much, but that's just a personal thing.
I don't care what he does with the draft. I think everyone should be a free agent.
Exactly. I think that would be the best solution.
I think they're worried the bigger market teams will get everybody and the small markets won't get anybody, which, again, I understand. But, you know, you want everyone on a level playing field, you know. That's impossible without a salary cap, and the union's never going to give up the salary cap. So the draft is the best alternative for what they're trying to do.
Yeah, which is keep down salaries. So,
I mean, you see a guy like Chris Bryant getting what he got in the draft under $10 million, and you see Jose Abreu getting $65 million. There's something wrong.
Or Yoan Moncada, even more to that point.
That was a eyebrow-raising contract, but he seems to be doing well, so I'm happy for him. But that's, you know, all it's going to take is one or two guys that get $50, $60 million and don't do anything that's going to really explode the market down there. I mean, the one guy that nobody ever even looks back at for understandable reasons, but back in like 98 or 99, or no, I'm sorry, it was 2001, the Yankees signed a third baseman from Cuba named Andy Morales for like $19 or $20 million. He never played in the big leagues.
That's a good point. There's a name that I haven't thought about in 10 years.
Exactly. And I vividly remember that one because he was a big, big name coming over and gave him all that money and didn't do anything.
Yeah, that was not, I guess that was a little bit in the Hideki Arabu era, maybe a little afterwards.
It was three, four years after.
Yeah.
Like Chin-Ming Wong era, Drew Henson era.
That time. God, Drew Henson. Started over Tom Brady at Michigan. Yeah.
Drew Henson was one of the best third base prospects I ever saw in my life.
His raw was, if it wasn't 80 raw, it was 70 raw, easy.
I mean, I to this day, he hit the farthest baseball I've ever seen in my life in Jupiter. He hit it over the left field building at Roger Dean Stadium and tore the covers on the ball like the Sandlot. But he literally ripped the stitches on the ball. I got it back for him, and I got it back for him and took a picture with him afterwards and got his autograph when I was 17. He was really, really nice to me. Little did I know Tom Brady would be Tom Brady, and probably should have gotten his autograph somehow.
Yeah, and he's one of the very rare instances I can think of a guy who should have made a decision one way or the other, because he could have been a phenomenal quarterback.
Good at either one of them.
Yeah.
He would have been good at either one if he just picked.
He just waited way too long, and then the next thing you knew, boom.
Wasn't Tom Brady drafted in baseball at some point?
Yeah, he definitely was. By the Nationals, right? It was Montreal.
As a pitcher.
Oh, I thought he was a catcher.
As a pitcher.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it was. I knew he was drafted in baseball.
Yeah, because I made that joke. Goodness, what was it that Russell Wilson is now better than Tom Brady in two sports after the Super Bowl a couple years ago?
That's pretty funny.
Even though Russell Wilson is not that good at baseball.
He's a proud member of the Texas Rangers.
Very true. Yeah, he and I might get the same number of at-bats in our career, though.
That's funny.
Next thing I got to ask you about, Josh, and I don't know how much you can talk about this, but I got to bring it up and then you tell me to shut up. But the Adam LaRoche and Drake LaRoche entire situation that blew up,
I remember. Yeah.
I kind of just like to get your take, first of all, as an agent, and I want to start with, it seems to me like, first of all, everybody loses in this situation, but it seems to me like if it wasn't in Adam's contract, it certainly was very well stated that, you know, Drake is coming along for the ride. He's part of the program.
The White Sox made it clear to him that they were okay with his presence around the ball club. They just wanted him to scale it back a little bit, from my understanding. And he didn't take well to the whole scaling back suggestion and just quit. And I don't understand that. And I read the ESPN article that he did yesterday, and he was like, yeah, I get it. You can't take a kid to work. You can't do this. I agree. I agree with what the White Sox did to a point, but I don't know. I don't know how you turn down $13 million for your family, just because your one kid out of your lot doesn't get to go every day to the workplace. And he always said that. This is just gross talking. I guess he always said that if anybody had a problem with it, you know, just talk to him about it. And he was pissed off that I guess some of his teammates went to the front office instead of him. And I don't know why he's pissed off at that, but, I don't think that's any place for a kid to be unless he's an employee of the ball club.
So it is now, because that was my original thought, was basically Kenny Williams was taking the, you know, laying on the sword, so to speak, for a couple of players that complained about it. I mean, that, because Kenny's not getting in the middle of this otherwise.
No, not at all. So I thought that whole situation was weird. And I'm glad I'm not a part of it.
And I guess I can't ask you how you would handle it as an agent, but I would like to ask why they didn't bring it up in October or after the season when you meet with every player.
It probably didn't come up until when it came up. I mean, that's my guess. So, I don't think it was an issue until it was. So I think Kenny handled it when it was brought to him, and it just... You know, that's the thing that I think got lost in a lot of the articles, is they kept saying, you know, they didn't ban the kid from traveling. They didn't ban him from the clubhouse. They just asked him to cut back on how much time he was around the team, and that didn't go over well.
And maybe you can speak to this because you spend some time in clubhouses, but nobody else, nobody else brings their kid around that much, right? I mean, this isn't...
No.
I mean, this is...
Never.
He is the exception, not the rule, is what I'm hearing.
Yes, there's no one who does that, that I can think of. That his own locker and jersey and wasn't the bad boy. I didn't even realize the extent of what the kid was doing. That's strange, because, you know, I see players' families all the time outside the locker room in the family areas, and they're there every game, but to be on field... shagging and stuff like that. I don't know. It comes off as to me as selfish, but, you know, if that's his prerogative, he also has the right to be with his family. And if he doesn't want $13 million, then more power to him. I don't have a problem with him doing that. It's not my money. And if he wants to spend time with his kids, that's on him. But the reasoning behind it, it's not my life or my place to be, you know, judging it, but I wouldn't have done that.
And this will probably be an unpopular take with the audience, but I can tell you, I would probably be annoyed if a kid, and particularly 14 is where he is now, is maybe even a little different, but when he was with the Nationals at 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, I don't think I would want to have somebody there 162 days a year at that age, being around the clubhouse.
No, I don't understand that at all. I don't know how it even got to that point, and it's bizarre. I guess if they want to negotiate it into the contract that his son has to be the bad boy, they probably could have done that. I'm sure I wouldn't have had a problem with it because that's a job, but to not have a place there and just to be there, I don't even want to be in the clubhouse. I'm not even allowed in the clubhouse. I don't want to be there. So, it's the Barry Bonds rule. They banned agents, people from going in the clubhouse because Bonds had his whole entourage there before games. So I'm not even in the clubhouse anymore.
And I find that weird that you, as an agent with a business relationship, can't be in there, but yet the kid could be. And I don't want this to come off as me saying the kid and being pejorative to Drake, because that this has nothing to do with him except for he's the person involved.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with the kid. If I was the kid, I'd want that too.
Yeah, hell yeah. I'd be the first one to be, yeah, can I shag flies? Can I have my locker? Can I have a jersey? I mean, you know, I'd be a 14-year-old kid. Hell, I'm a 35-year-old kid at heart, you know? I mean...
Yeah, I would have taken him up on those things, but I don't know. I mean, now Adam has more time to spend with his family and Phil Robertson.
And once again, if you can't answer this, you know, just tell me. But what would you have advised him as an agent? I mean, if you have Adam LaRoche as your client and he batted 206 last year, I assume he's financially independent, to say the least. But like you say, $13 million is still $13 million. I mean, hell, maybe it becomes $6.5 million once the government gets to it. But that's a lot of money.
It is. I don't think you can advise a player in that situation. You know, they're not going to ask for it. They're going to do their own thing. So, you know, a guy like LaRoche could never have hired me in 20 years. So, and if he did, he probably would have fired me. So, I don't know. I don't think I'm ever going to be in that situation. But, I mean, obviously, I would have told him, start to build an airport path. But I would have obviously told everybody up, and you know, I don't know if I would have even. I probably would have done everything I could to dissuade somebody from bringing their kid to work that much. I mean, it's a tricky subject. You can get fired as an agent, but I would have. I mean, I don't think I even would have let it get to that point if I could have avoided it. But who knows? I wasn't in the room. I don't know what the relationship was. A guy like that's probably never going to hire me. So I don't think I'm ever going to have to deal with something like that.
And I don't know if this is true, but. It seems like Kenny Williams went directly to Adam LaRoche rather than, and I don't know if even Adam has an agent. He seems like the kind of guy that kind of cat that may actually not.
I think he did.
So Kenny did go to the agent and went through
him. No, he went directly to Adam, from what I understand, which is what they should do.
Okay, so that's what. So you agree with that move rather than going through the agent?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's not. I don't think there's any place for an agent unless they're asked by the player. I mean, if the agent has a good relationship with the ball club and the club wants to say, hey, if you're getting out of hand, you can talk to a player, then sure, that could happen. But I don't know. I don't really have a problem with something like this going through the player. I mean, especially since it involves the player. But I don't understand why in God's name they would do something like that.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's working out for everybody so far. I guess LaRoche is getting more time with his family, and the White Sox are 6-1 or 6-2 as we record this. So we just finished up talking Adam and Drake LaRoche, so now I want to move topics and transition a little bit if I can. Let me ask you, maybe it's just giving you a place to brag, so to speak, but Jeremy Jeffress, I think he's leading the National League in saves right now?
Yeah, all of baseball.
That's pretty nice.
it's fun waking up to that every day. He's in a good spot and he's doing really well, and this is kind of what we always dreamed about, JJ and I, just putting him in this position. And I know a big motivating factor for JJ was always making right with the Brewers after they drafted him, and that was always kind of a personal thing for Jeremy, was to just make sure things were good with Milwaukee and the people that helped him when he was young. And he's finally gotten the opportunity, and which is, you know, it's great, but the way it happened was tough because his best friend, Will Smith, hurt his LCL in spring, and he didn't want to win the job that way. But I don't think he's ever going to give it back at this point. He's just really good.
Yeah, for those of people who are listening to this, just a tremendous article this week about Jeremy in, I guess it was MLB.com. I don't know the writer, and I'm
Adam McCauley.
But just a fantastic article talking about Jeremy and a little bit about your relationship with him as well.
Yeah, it goes back a long time, man. There was a lot of stuff in that article that couldn't fit. I mean, it should be a movie. I mean, he was waiting tables at one point at an Uno, and I drove to Brevard County right the next day after he got 100 games, and we went to go play basketball in the middle of the not rich area, and I thought I was going to get murdered. And I just remember I was shooting threes, and we were playing one-on-one, and I just told him, like, we'll get through this. I'll get you through it somehow, and I'll make it better. And he was fine after that. I mean, he worked really hard to get back to where he was. And when things weren't great in Kansas City and things weren't great in Toronto, I kept telling him I'd get us through it. And then finally he hit free agency, and we could pick where he went. And probably the hardest thing I've ever done in my career, business-wise, is major league teams were courting him on major league offers when he hit free agency, because they realized after not claiming him off waivers with Toronto might have been a mistake, because everyone thought the market wouldn't be that high for him for some reason. And turns out when everyone realized that everyone was calling me, I must have heard from 10, 15, 20 teams. A few of the teams got aggressive and just said, you know, we need a mea culpa with the waivers. We'll just give him a big league deal. And I don't know if another agent would have done this. I don't know if I would even do it again, but I turned down a major league offer to take a minor league deal, which I've never done in my career and I will probably never do again. And it just was right for the player, and I had a lot of teams angry at me for doing that. And fortunately, the clubs understand that I was doing right by my client and doing the best I could for Jeremy and putting him in a position to succeed for the long term and not just the short term. And the way we came to that decision was, if he was on a big league deal with another club and didn't have the foundation, it would have just been more spinning his wheels, where he's this journeyman type pitcher, which I didn't want. And I said, you can either try to give it a go back with Milwaukee, or we can go to one of these other teams. And we picked Milwaukee. He was in the minors for about a month. And then he got called up to the big leagues and had a sub-2 ERA the rest of the season. Last year he had a 2.6, and this year he's closing.
Now, let me ask you a little bit from the financial side, and I probably don't even fully understand the decision, but what were you turning down in terms? How much money were you turning down, or was Jeremy turning down?
You're talking about the difference between league minimum and $80,000 if you didn't get called up to the big leagues.
So that's a $400,000 to $500,000 decision for a man that had made a nice signing bonus in the first round, but didn't have made any other money. So, I mean, that's a big decision.
It was significant. And I told him, I think it's in the article. It is in the article, but I told him, like, man, if I'm wrong, you can fire me. I've not messed up anything in your career to this point. All I've done is help. And I really, it was tough for me to bring it up to him, because I didn't know what the hell to tell him, because I kept running the scenarios out of my head where he was going to be a big leaguer permanently, or where he had a chance to become a big leaguer permanently. And the only team at that point in time for where he was, I felt like the Brewers were his best shot. Now, there were other clubs that have great pitching coordinators and great pitching coaches and opportunities at the major league level, but you can't look at it in a vacuum when you're an agent. You can't. You have to know your players and what's going to work for them and what isn't. And it's why some guys can't pitch in New York, and when some guys like being in the smaller markets. And you really have to know that about your players. And if I, at that time, sent Jeremy or advised him to go somewhere else, I don't necessarily think this would have happened. And certainly, he probably, with the clubs that were offering major league deals, I don't believe he'd be closing right now if he went to those other clubs, given what they've done, you know, since Jeremy didn't sign with them.
Yeah, that's a well said, great point. And so final question on that topic is, how's your basketball jumper?
Good. I can shoot like crazy. We were joking about this every spring with all the Mets beat writers. There was Tim Rohan, Mark Gray, Mike Borkunov, and Jarek Diamond. And Jarek covers the Yankees now, and they used to joke about Jarek. They called him Rain Man because we'd always do the Papa Shot, or he would always do the Papa Shot to destroy everybody. And when I got to know these guys, they took me over to play Papa Shot, and I beat the hell out of all those guys. And I don't know if you know this, but at Universal Studios in Florida, they have like a boardwalk of carnival games.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a freakish ability to win carnival games, like absurdly good. And they actually, at one point, I won so many things. We have 4 bags of stuffed animals, like giant ones, and they're like, how the hell did you win that? And Universal had security following me around like a casino, thinking I was cheating. And there's one basketball game where you get 3 shots and like a $200 stuffed animal, and I hit 9 shots in a row, and they just, I had people coming up like, I've never seen that. The balls are overinflated. The hoop's oval. I'm like, yeah, I can do this. I mean, one thing I can do is I always could shoot and I always could pass. And, I mean, I made a three on Brantley before. I made a bunch of threes on Jeremy. Now, granted, I got blocked a lot by those guys, but, I mean, this is going back to, like, 2008. We'd go to Dave & Buster's or you know, anywhere that had a pop-a shop, and I would literally beat all of my clients. And this spring, it was Alan Sharkey, Brandon Diaz, Carlos Leal, Dustin DeMuth, and Jeremy, and we all, and Jay Chapman, too. And we all went to Dave & Buster's this past spring for, like, what, a month ago? And we had it all lined up at the Dave & Buster's pop-a shot, and I lost a few of the games, like, to all five guys. But when it was even and everybody had the same amount of basketballs, I literally beat all of them, and they were not happy.
Okay. So far I've learned about you. You're amazing at pop-a shot and boardwalk games. Apparently you can play hoops, and you're a hockey goalie. What is going on?
Yeah, the fuck?
What is going on?
I was never that good at basketball.
Oh, and you're a comic, too, on top of it. What else?
I do everything, man. I do everything. I try to do as much stuff as I can. But with the carnival games, there's one where you have to throw a beanbag at a balloon.
Yeah, I've seen that.
You have to two or three. And the woman was like, it was all, like, there were six in a row. And I paid for two games. And she's like, well, let me fill up the other balloons. I'm like, no, I just need to hit these six. And she's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I just need these six. I don't need you to refill anything. And then I hit all six in a row, and she just was like, what the hell?
Oh, my God. All right, so...
even on the ring toss game, they have at Universal...
Which is rigged!
It's rigged. My wife's hit it twice, and then I hit it the very first time I played. And I hit it twice in the same game, and the woman's there like, what the hell?
All right, when you come to Baltimore, we're finding some pop-a shot, because I wanted to see this in action.
You won't. I'll play you for money. Like, I won't lose.
I suck at basketball. Believe me.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I'm horrible at hoops. I mean, I'll lose beers to you all night, or you don't drink, but I'll lose money to you, but I'm horrible.
But here's the other day, it was my best friend's, or one of my best friend's bachelor parties, and, it was like a pool party, and we ended up going to his basketball courts in his complex, and Philippe Valiquette's staying with me right now. He's working out for the Mets this week or next week, and then he's got to work out for a couple other teams if the Mets don't sign him, which that's not a guarantee, but, you know, we'll see. And Philippe came with me to the bachelor party, and we went to the Panther game afterwards. And but anyway, when we were playing basketball, it was funny. He was supposed to guard me, and I would do these, like I was running, like I was playing point guard, so I'd like try to cut under the hoop, but I'd like run full speed and stop, and then just let him keep running without me and like an open shot.
Hold up, whoop.
Yeah, he was pissed at one of them because he's like, I thought you could only shoot that in pop a shot. I'm like, no, it translates.
Yeah, no, the skill still works.
Gosh. Yeah, I mean, I was the only, we were terrible. Like, I was rusty and I didn't play basketball in a year, and I missed my, like, first 15 shots in warm-ups. And then when the game started, I hit my first two threes, and I was like, what the hell?
Oh, you were doing the old Billy Hoyle and White Men Can't Jump, man. You were hustling.
No, that's exactly what it was. It was so funny, but the best, I still think the best one out of all of them is I literally was running full speed to cut from the top of the key to underneath the hoop, and I just stopped running, and he kept running without me, and then I got the ball and hit a three, and he was so pissed. And he asked me, he's like, how'd you do that? I'm like, you took your eye off me. All I had to do is stop running. It was easy.
Yeah. You're fast. Your momentum keeps going that way. Yeah.
Oh, it was so funny. Like, it was a trick I used to do in high school, and it always worked in high school, and then people got better at basketball, and it never worked. But
it's funny how that works.
I knew.
Yeah.
Yeah, it never works now. But he'd never played me, but he'd never seen me play before. I'm like, this will totally work. And he was so mad.
God.
Well, the best part was, I remember when I got the ball, I'm like, I can't miss this. I have to hit this shot.
Because this isn't going to work again. Boom.
No, it was the first three I hit all day. And it was just, I was really close. It was like a Steph Curry shot. I mean, I was way behind the line. And it went right in. And everyone's like, oh my God. I'm like, it was wide open. If I missed this, I would quit.
Really? You're putting yourself over like Steph Curry now? Really?
No, it was Steph Curry distance. I missed 15 shots in a row. I was terrible, but that was a really poor shot. I'm like, it's weird. It's like even, actually, here's a good story. Philippe and I always, like by our house, like literally by where I live is a batting cage. And I still take BP. Like, and I always go in the 80 mile an hour cage because that's as fast as they have it. And I was a switch hitter, and I just go in there and I rake. And my swing's ugly. I'll rake on the 80 mile an hour cage, and he watched me. He's like, Jesus Christ, this looks better than some of the guys I played with. I'm like, no, my swing's disgusting. I just have ridiculous hand-eye coordination. So some of like the dumb tricks I'll do in a batting cage, because like I was a goalie, so my hand-eye is ridiculous, which is the only skill I have. It's my hand-eye, which is why the carnival games are good. Yeah, but we'll go to the batting cage, and we'll go in the 80 cage, and I'll show him like dumb tricks I can do at the batting cage. Like I'll swing one-handed, and I can still hit it. Or the other one, I love trying to show him the trick where I can actually make contact swinging with the handle. and he just looks at me, he's like, what the hell? How do you do that? I'm like, I just see the ball, man. It's like a goalie. I can see it. I can't always hit it.
Yeah, but try stopping on a quarter-inch thick puck for, 20 years. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I see everything. Like, my hand eyes good. But the funniest one is this was like a year ago when he was staying with us. He's like, let me pitch to you. And I'm like, no, you throw 100. That won't work for me. And he's like, no, I'll go easy. And he really like went way too easy on me. And he threw a pitch to me. And it must have been like 65 miles an hour. And I crushed it. And I'm like, that's the first time I ever got a hit off a client. And he's like, yeah, that's not good.
that's not saying much. Yeah, that's not a good sign.
No, but then like the next pitch was like 85 in my head. And I'm like, all right, we're done.
Yeah. All right, good night. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I watched his pen while we were talking yesterday, and he was like 90-94, and I'm like, yeah, I can't touch that. But what's actually interesting is because of my hand-eye, it actually makes it a lot easier for me to scout.
Oh, because you can run the gun and write notes at the same time?
Well, no, I actually see the ball coming out of the pitcher's hand, so I know what they're throwing.
Oh, that's actually, yeah, that is kind of nice.
Yeah, I mean, I like everybody else, I have to ask, like, hey, what was that, if I don't know, but more often than not, I know what they're throwing. Like, I don't need help that often. Like, if I miss something or I'm talking, which is often,
really?
I'll ask, but, yeah. Well, you saw what Joe Lemire wrote after the article with McCalvey, right? He's like, good job getting the normally reclusive Josh Kuznick to speak out on a topic.
Yeah, it was amazing that you got yourself involved and got a quote in. Nice.
Yeah, that's not common. I think I might be the most quoted agent out there.
It's besides Boris? 1,000%. 1,000%. Yeah.
I think it's because of attrition, though, because every other agent is smart enough not to talk. But it worked for me. It wouldn't work for everybody. I always try to, if there are people that still message me wanting to become an agent or college kids or people with a baseball background, and they see what I'm doing, and they think that's the model, and I try to tell them, like, if you do what I did to get here, like the way I acted, it will not work for you.
Yeah, particularly in this day and age of social media, no chance.
I am grateful my career started before social media existed.
I'm sidebar, but I'm so thankful that there wasn't social media when I was in college. Oh my gosh.
Well, that's the thing, is that's why I love the movie The Social Network so much, because I was a sophomore in college when Facebook got invented, so I was in that sweet spot. Like, somebody would come up to me at a party, was like, hey, Facebook me. What the hell are you talking about? And, like, I vividly remember when those things would happen. They're like, hey, Facebook me. I don't know what that is.
Right. Yeah. I'm fun. I don't know what that is. Oh, wait.
Yeah, I actually was, and I can brag about this. I joined Facebook the year it was invented, so I have that for me, but
which is, yeah, nice.
I remember the whole social media boom, because before that, the only way to really contact with people was AIM, and MSN Messenger, and Facebook kind of consolidated all that. And I remember for a period, and it's gotten out of control now, so I don't do it. But I remember initially, I would message people on Facebook to see if they had an agent or not, and it worked a few times, and nothing significant came from it. But now, actually, I don't want to say that. I signed a big leaguer through Facebook years ago. But it just doesn't work now. I mean, every high school, college kid, you know, free agent, you know, they all get hit up on Facebook now, and it's mostly by uncertified agents because they don't know what they're doing. They think that's their only access, and they make that judgment that, you know, creepy contact on Facebook is better than no contact, and that's certainly not always the case. Sometimes it's better just not to even touch it.
Correct.
Because if you can't get an audience or talk to a guy without having to resort to social media, you're not getting hired.
That's very true. That's a great point. So,
I mean, I can't think of a scenario where a guy's a high-end first-rounder and, you know, you message him on Facebook, hey, do you have an advisor? No. Oh, man, that's great. Let's do this.
Yeah, sight unseen. All right. Thanks, buddy. Why?
Well,
I love your profile pic. Yeah.
Well, that's the other uncomfortable thing about it is now I can see it looking back on it. You don't want to start recruiting on Facebook when you haven't seen guys play. Because I told a scout this the other day with the Astros. He was shocked when I told him this. I asked about a player, and I'm like, is that any good? And he's like, all the publications say the top 20 guy. And I'm like, I don't read any of this. I can't think of the last time I religiously read Baseball America's rankings or any of them. They don't matter outside of endorsements. Like, if it's my own client and I happen to see it, then I use it. But as far as like ordering the prospect handbook to recruit, I don't do that anymore. I haven't bought their prospect handbook in 6 years, and those things don't matter to me. And if I went by those things, I wouldn't have found Seth Lugo. I wouldn't have found his fly. I probably wouldn't have found Tyler White, even though that's how that didn't end up well for me. But, you know, there's no way I would have found those guys if I just went by the depth chart and prospect rankings. And what's interesting is it's really difficult to sell those guys, even though I knew they were good to a point. It's hard to sell those guys to companies because they're like, well, he's not on the prospect ranking. And I was like, oh, damn it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Like Lugo, I had to fight tooth and nail to get Seth a shoe deal, and he's on the 40-man with the Mets, and it was hard to get him a deal, and I don't understand that.
Because he didn't get blown up in any of the prospect rankings. You're exactly right.
None. I literally could
Which
not get
crazy.
Him a shoe deal until spring this year. I have guys in A-ball with shoe deals that were easier to get than him.
And he's at least a top 5 to 8 prospect in that system right now. At least.
Yeah.
At least.
Gotta be.
I mean, you know, I see that system. I know what's going on. Yeah.
He's following a similar trajectory. I mean, a year behind, but he's following a similar trajectory that DeGrom had. And I've always pumped him to DeGrom. I always thought they were similar players. And obviously, DeGrom's a lot more advanced. But
I
always
get the
thought
point.
They were similar.
Yeah.
I thought they were similar players the first time I scouted Seth. And, you know, he had that over-the-top 94, and I've told the story. I thought he was a first-rounder when I first saw him, and somebody told me when the 33rd round, he was wearing the same cleat he had in college, and I'm like, there's no way this is happening. Because I think I told you earlier that week, I was at Mets camp, and the same thing happened to me. Or, I'm sorry, it was a week after I'd signed Seth, and the same thing happened to me. I'm like, oh, my God, I just found another one. And then the guy turned around, and it was like, oh, Syndergaard.
Yeah, you're like, oh yeah,
but
he
usually
is.
When you see a guy at that level,
they stick
99%
out.
99% of the time, when they turn around, it's like, oh, first rounder, oh, big leaguer, oh,
yeah.
And then every so often, you see a guy like Lugo, and it's like, oh, well, sweet. I mean, there was a guy who didn't hire me 3 years ago that I was in on. I didn't really pursue it that much because I didn't know the guy, but. A guy that I loved, and he was 27 years old or 26 years old in the Florida State League, repeating the level. But I love the guy. I'm like, this guy's got a shot to play in the big leagues. And long story short, the guy's name is Blake McFarland, and now he's on the 40-man with the Blue Jays, 28 years old. And I'm like, God damn it, I should have bared down on that one more.
Yeah, because those are the ones you can steal. Hell yeah, 26 in the Florida State League.
He didn't have an agent. He didn't
I was just going to say,
one.
Yeah.
He didn't even have an agent. I just didn't really pursue it because I was busy with one of his teammates at the time, but I scouted him, broke him down. I talked to other scouts who hated him, and they were trying to talk me out of it, and I didn't get talked out of it. I just didn't. I was busy. Like, I didn't have enough time for him, so I couldn't sign him, but what a great kid and a great story. I mean, he's actually an artist off the field.
Hmm. Nice.
Like, he has his own website, and I remember his biggest concern was, if I would take a percentage of his art sales. And I'm like, I've never been asked that question before.
I can legitimately say that's the first time.
Yeah, so he's I'm glad he's on the 40, man. He's a really terrific kid. I really, really like him, and I should have fared down better.
All right, next topic I got to ask you about. Where are we at with Mr. Belding coming on the podcast?
Oh, man, we need that to happen. I got to pursue that again. I got to give you his info. If I give you his email address, I guarantee you he would do it.
Oh, my God. That would be bucket list of bucket list to get Richard Belding
really
on the podcast.
I wish you asked me that off air earlier because I forgot. And if you text me when we're done, I'll send you his email address.
That wouldn't be very. That would be the greatest thing of all time, having Richard Belding's email address. Oh, my God.
It wasn't even – and I already have it, so it already happened to me. But it's funny, like, anybody who listens to this, like, I told you, I was in the middle of – I wasn't in the middle. I was finishing up a meeting with a vendor at the winter meetings, and I just – I'm like, somebody had a signed picture of Dennis Haskins, and I was like, where the hell did you get that? It's like, oh, he's right over there. I'm like, see ya.
Yeah, meeting adjourned. Boom.
Yeah, I was like, I'm like, I'm sorry, I'll be right back. I mean, this winter meetings is 4 days long. I'll be right back.
Yeah, we can work on this later.
I told you, like, during that encounter, he hugged me, and I'm like, oh, that's so Mr. Belding, awesome.
Yeah, it would be way better to get a hug from Dennis Haskins than any supermodel ever. It's like, oh, Dennis Haskins.
Well, like, I met Marissa Miller a couple of years ago, at the Futures game, and that was, like, you know, before I was married, and I was like, oh my gosh, Marissa Miller, the SI model. And that was like my dream woman. And Philippe actually was in the Futures game. And she was in the charity softball game. And we were staying in the dugout during the charity softball game at the All-Star game. And I'm like 2 feet from Marissa Miller. And I was like, oh my God. And did not even come close to when I met Mr. Belding. It was way better meeting him than Marissa Miller.
Do you drop any nuggets to Marissa?
What'd you say?
Do you drop any nuggets like Carmelo on her?
I didn't talk to her really. I mean, it was a brief encounter during the game, and my dad texted me that he saw me on TV in the dugout, and I'm like, oh, that's creepy. I gotta stop this.
Yeah, that's a really bad look, you hitting on a supermodel. Not at all.
It was just funny. It was me, it was Philippe and I just after the Futures game sitting in the dugout, and we were the only people in the dugout.
Nice.
Because, like, they have chairs set up, you know, on the field for the guys playing in the game, and we're just sitting in the dugout by ourselves, and we're like, just, we gotta go.
Yeah.
What's interesting, like, not even interesting, like, Philippe and I were like, wow, she's not really that tall in person.
That's surprising.
Yeah, it was hilarious, though. I mean, that was, I met her, and when we were in spring this year, my wife and I, the parking lot attendant for the Angels was really nice, but, like, everybody else who worked there was kind of a jerk, and, like, this is actually really funny. I drove Jeremy's car to the field. I was meeting him there to pick him up after the game, and I parked in the Angels lot, and after I told him I was picking up a guy in the Brewers, they almost threw me out, and I was like, wait, what? I'm picking up a player, and then we go to the will call, and he forgot to leave tickets, and they told me, the first guy was really nice, and he's like, oh man, I'm sorry, you didn't leave tickets, can call him. I'm like, no, he's playing,
right.
And and they're like, well, there's nothing we can do. And I'm like, can you get your manager? And the manager came out and he was a dick to me. And he's like, you know, you got to call him. And my wife got pissed at him. Like, hey, he's playing. And then finally, I had to call the Brewers, like, team doctor because he didn't have tickets either. And they let him in with his credentials. And he had to say I was with them to let me in because they almost made me miss Jeremy's first outing.
Wow. Well, at least we know the security's legitimate. Yeah.
Yeah, the security was good. It was just inconvenient for me. So anyway, long story short, the guy who worked there, who had a World Series ring on, it turns out he played minor league baseball in the late 70s, and he was the inspiration for the comic book Spawn, and I didn't believe him, and then I Googled it, and he totally was. His name's Al Simmons, and he had all kinds of lawsuits, because he apparently got a pile of money to sign over his likeness. To Todd McFarlane, and there were all kinds of lawsuits because he was doing Comic-Cons and all this other stuff, he's like, he gave my wife his baseball card, and Topps had made one for me for the foundation for the Bladder Esri Foundation that I was trying to raise money for, and the guy's like, hey, do you have a baseball card? I'm like, I do, here, and we traded baseball cards, and it was weird because other.
Yeah, he was a jerk to you 2 minutes earlier, and now you're trading cards.
He was super nice the whole time. Like, he was the one guy.
Oh, he was the nice guy. Oh, my bad.
Yeah, he was the nice guy. It was the other guys who worked there tried throwing me out, because the guy who, Al Simmons, was like, hey, just park here. Don't worry about it. Everyone was all like, ah, no, we're the guardians of the parking lot. And
their fiefdom, you know, can't be messed with. Right, exactly, yeah.
Well, it's funny, because there were so many autograph collectors there, and it was really, you know my background. It was tough for me not to harass Albert Pujols or Mike Trout. And like, the autograph collector in me wants to do something, but the professional in me can't.
Who did your wife get the ball signed by?
Pedro Martinez.
Oh, so jealous. Oh.
Yeah, he was. I got to talk to Pedro, because I hadn't seen him since I was a kid, since I was probably 14. And I have a cool Pedro story. When I was a kid, when he was with the Expos the year before he won his first Cy Young, I had a 96 Fleer card of him, which is like my favorite set of all time. The 96 and 97 Fleers are my favorite set of all time.
Was that the gray border with the white little markings?
They were the matte paper cards.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And they were the easiest cards to get autographed because there was no gloss. And they were my favorite set ever. And I had one of Pedro. And I saw him walking around West Palm Beach Stadium on the Braves side. And he was in uniform, and he was just walking around in the stadium. And I was like, oh, my God, it's Pedro. And he was good then. I just wanted him to sign my card. And he was about to sign it, and he grabs me, like, grabbed me by, like, I was 14, so he grabs me by, like, the shoulders. He's like, there's a crowd coming, like, with a stampede, like in The Simpsons. And he grabbed me and threw me and himself into the umpire changing room to sign my card, and then he snuck through the tunnels of the stadium to get away from that crowd.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I told him that story when I saw him the other day, and he just started laughing. But he was nice. You know what's crazy is that place, the facility, so wide open, and I was there watching Kemp and Taylor Grover play, and there were no autograph collectors there, and it was the last day of spring, and it was my brain almost melted that there were maybe two people who asked Pedro for his autograph, and I just was like, I told my guys who were there, I told Grover, who was, I think he was charting that day, I'm like, dude, I'm sorry, man. I got to do this. My wife's like, no, I'll do it. And I was like, all right, cool.
Yeah, he would be one of a couple that I would break any kind of, I would go complete fanboy for. Yeah.
Like Pedro, Cal, Griffey Jr., Bonds. I would totally breach etiquette for those.
Yeah, definitely. Bagwell would be mine. He was my favorite growing up.
The tricky one for me now, though, is Mark McGwire, because he's Carlos Osuna's hitting coach in the big league, so I can't do that.
Yeah, and Bo Jackson's probably my number one seed. If I saw him, I would just mark out.
I met Bo Jackson at one of his events, you know, his public speaking events back in 2006 or 5, and I got a football and his rookie card from the NFL and from MLB, his 86 Topps card signed, and he was super nice. And I can't believe how expensive his stuff is now. Like, there's like this Bo Jackson renaissance like now where everyone's like, he's the greatest player ever scouted. He would have been the greatest player ever if he didn't get injured or if he just picked the sport. And ask anybody who scouted in the last 30 years if they happen to see Bo Jackson as an amateur, and everyone tells you he was the best player they ever scouted, ahead of Bonds, ahead of Griffey Jr., Frank Thomas. Like, Bo Jackson's like the unanimous answer. And this is when I'm talking to higher-end front office people, they get angry at the Yasiel Puig comps to Bo Jackson they're like, Yasiel Puig close, you know, like he has the same skill set, but Bo is so much better than everybody. I mean, this is a guy who ran like, you know, he ran like Billy Hamilton, but he had power like Frank Thomas.
It was insane. It just, the 30 for 30 on him, just watch the first 15 minutes. The stories about him and his legacy are unbelievable.
Well, remember the throw where he threw Harold Reynolds out at home?
That was like
that might
absurd.
Be the greatest throw I've ever seen.
I was watching it. I was at the game when he was in Baltimore, and he climbed the damn wall. I mean,
I remember that.
It was the craziest thing you've ever seen. I was probably 7 or 8 years old, and I thought he was freaking Spider-Man. I'd never seen
it. Everybody thought that who grew up with him. It was unbelievable. And I remember as a kid, I couldn't process that he was an All-Star and a Pro Bowler. It didn't make sense to me.
His quads were as big as most people's waist. I mean, it was just insane. He could break the bat over his head as he snapped it with his wrists once. I mean, he was just insane.
the hilarious thing is he was a Pro Bowler, and he might have been one of the best running backs in the NFL. He was one of the best center fielders, right fielders in baseball,
and he's the best video game athlete of all time.
Oh my God, a Tecmo Bowl character is the greatest ever.
Just sweep right, sweep left, no problem.
He was unstoppable. That was such an annoying thing. I mean, I don't know if you saw this. There was an announcement the other day that they're still finding like codes and like not glitches, but like Easter eggs in Mike Tyson's Punch Out.
I saw
now.
This
so, like a couple, yeah, like, a couple days ago. They found the trick to knocking out like Bald Bull. Like if you wait till like one of the cameramen in the audience like takes a picture or like the shutter flash goes up, you punch him at that exact second and knock him down with one punch.
Really?
Yeah, and there are all these things like that people are still finding. And like the one that I was really excited about because of the nerd in me, because I was like the guy in the arcade who would always beat everybody at Mortal Kombat. Like I won tournaments. Like I was really good at Mortal Kombat.
Now you're putting yourself over as video game play, hand eye. Got it.
No, I was ridiculous. I mean, there was like maybe 6-7 years ago when Mortal Kombat came out on Xbox, my old roommate at the time, who was great at it, we played, and I won like 300 matches in a row against him, and it opened up some Easter egg, but he would like get so angry and fight me and accuse me of being cheated, and it's like I don't lose at this game. And I mean it took him like 300 times to beat me because I think I missed something, and I was always good at Mortal Kombat. And like this past month they found these ridiculous game menus where when you turn the cabinet on, when you turn the arcade cabinet on, if you have this like button combination where you hit block X amount of times on controller one, controller two, you hit it as many times. Like the guy who created the game was Ed Boon, so whatever his first, middle, and last name was, however many. Like B is the second letter in the alphabet, so you hit block twice on controller two, and it was some weird combination like that. And it opens up this whole new gaming menu where you can see everybody's, when you beat the game, you get to see the player's story without playing the game. And in, like Mortal Kombat 3, it opened up like Mortal Kombat version of Galaga. And once the game's over, it goes back to the regular game. But I just can't believe people are still interested enough in those games that they're still finding stuff 30 years later.
I'm surprised we haven't found everything. So
that's the thing. Yeah. They asked Ed Boon, and he's like, "There's still stuff people haven't found," and it's like, "Oh my god!"
Mm. Wow.
But no, I loved. I mean, I was so the only two video games I was like great at were Mortal Kombat 2, and which I still play, and NHL. Which in college, this is a cool story. In college, I won like a qualifying tournament for NHL, and. I got invited to go to like Helsinki to play in the NHL like World Olympics, and I obviously in college I didn't go to Finland, but I have the shirts from it because I won the tournament.
You got to tweet out the picture. I want to see that picture of the shirt.
I should take a picture of that shirt. I love that shirt.
I want that. I want to see that tweet. So
yeah. So right. I mean, I haven't played NHL in a couple of years because it's a glorified roster update now, and I haven't really missed it all that much, but I think I'm going to certainly play like one game a year whenever I have time, so I think this year I'm just going to stick with NBA 2K16, which is a good year to pick up basketball again, so that's been fun.
Very true. All right, Josh, we're an hour, so I'm going to cut you off here.
Yep.
And let the audience know where they can find you on Twitter and online if they want to reach you.
I am at Joshua Kuznick. It's Twitter, my email's my name at AOL.com, and I'm on Facebook, but I only use up front, so I'm fairly easy to read.
Yeah, definitely. So Josh, thank you a bunch for coming back. I'm glad we finally recorded. We've been trading phone calls, and goodness, it's been a couple months now, so.
Yeah, I know. We'll keep up on it better, but yeah, I love doing it, so just call me whenever.
Very cool, and hopefully I'll see you next month when you're in Baltimore.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All righty. Thanks, Josh.
Yeah, no problem. I'll give you a buzz this week. Let me know when the thing's up, and I'll
And that was episode 11 of the Joshua Kuznick Experience. I want to thank Josh for getting on the horn twice with me this week to finish that interview. So a lot of fun catching up with him. So thank you to Josh, and thank you guys for listening. We should be back hopefully sometime in May with a new episode. So until then, if you don't have the dollars, you better get some sense.